All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sick Harrison Price for Monday, March 18th, 2024, coming to you from the GoGoat Sports Studio, built by Arbor Lee here at the iconic Wall Center, downtown Vancouver. If you're heading to a game, going to an event downtown, make it a staycation, call the Wall, 604-331-1000. Ask for the Sick Harrison Price rate. Some blackout dates may apply. Matt Sick Harrison alongside Blake Price. Grady Sass hitting switches, conducting things. We got a big show planned for you. It's all brought to you by Applewood Auto Group.
Applewood Kia in Surrey's got the EV6. And the Kia Niro EVs, both with financing available at 4.99%. Never been easier to go electric here, folks. That's for up to 60 months. Head down to Applewood Kia in Surrey. It is all good at Applewood.
Tim Horton's poll question, who needs to step it up more? Elias or Elias? Lindholm or Pettersson? You can vote at Sick Harrison Price on Twitter and YouTube. Roll Up is here. Roll Up to Win is here for Tim's 60th anniversary. Play on the Tim's app to win prizes. Daily cash jackpot, $10,000. Can win the all-electric Volkswagen ID4 and a sun-soaked Hilton getaway. Download the Tim's app. Roll Up is on until March 31st. I voted Pettersson. Look, Elias Lindholm has been disappointing since the trade from Calgary, but I think you can still win games with him being a defensive stalwart and chipping in offensively. Sure, you'd like to see more points from him, but Pettersson has to be a bus driver. I mean, he has to be a guy generating offense for himself and his teammates. I know his line mates are not ideal. I think it's becoming more and more evident that they absolutely needed that winger by the trade deadline, but I voted Pettersson here. Just because I think he's more important to team success.
I'm going to say Pettersson too. We know what that looks like. But it takes on a whole, this is why we go live, folks. Line rushes are happening. This is an informed answer now. Can Elias Pettersson get on track with Hoglander on his left now and Garland on his right?
Garland's been an awkward fit beside Pettersson and others. He plays an unorthodox style, but from a pure skill point of view, from a puck retrieval point of view, I mean, at this stage of the game, I'm all for the coaching staff trying that.
And can Lindholm get on track with Mikheyev on his left and Lafferty on his right?
Probably not.
So, yeah, how does that inform the voting here today, mm-hmm. knowing there's new spots and new guys to help these guys get off their schneids? The EP40 skill rating on the wingers is fine. It's a pretty small line. It's a pretty lightweight line. Can they make it work?
It's 7 points, 4 goals in 19 games as a Vancouver Canuck. Of course, two of those goals happened in his first game when he deflected a couple of pucks into the goal. So in the next 18 games, it has been just the 5 points for Lindholm. So what's behind this? Talk me through it a little bit. Okay, you're not playing first line center minutes anymore. You're not been given the best wingers when you have played center, and you've looked uncomfortable playing right wing beside Pettersson. Not to mention this fact, it does take some time for a traded player to integrate and forge chemistry with his new teammates. How much faith, confidence, if any, do you have in Lindholm finding his offensive groove in the next 14 games before the end of the regular season?
Well, the question to me is, what is his offensive groove? I do like the player. I think he's a smart player. I think he understands how to play defensive hockey well. I think that will bode well in the playoffs. But for the price that was paid, of course, you do want some offense. And it's just too little. Like, this guy doesn't need to be leading the team in offense by any stretch of the imagination. But he does need something. Now, again, given what we just laid out in terms of the lines, is that likely to happen? It's amazing what one winger missing in this lineup does with Dakota Joshua. I have said it once. I will say it again, Matt. It's time to compress the skill guys that they have into the top three lines. I think they have to abandon this.
So is that Lindholm at center with PD playing the wing, or vice versa? Yes.
I would go Lindholm at center.
Okay. Incidentally, Kuzmenko with 8 points, 5 goals in 14 games as a Calgary Flame. So he's not only outpointing Elias Lindholm, he's doing so in fewer games. He has played 5 fewer games as a Flame than Lindholm has as a Canuck.
He's probably playing less. Points per minute are probably better for Kuzmenko as well. And yet,
because Lindholm's still playing a hefty shift here. I mean, he's playing 1750 per night as a Vancouver Canuck.
And yet, you know, again, if you're only going to be a middling offensive producer and you're not helping your team in the third period, some coaches will say, I'm okay with a little less production if I can trust the guy in the third period. And they're not giving Kuzmenko those assignments. So, you know, that trade is going to be an interesting one to break down when we've got the full slate of games at the end of 82 to look at. I don't think it's a lost cause with Elias Lindholm whatsoever.
No, me neither.
And I think come playoff time, we might see an elevated player as well. But I think it would behoove a lot of these Canucks forwards to flick the switch now. Flick that damn switch. Don't wait till game one.
This may be crazy town thinking from where they were earlier in the season as the NHL's top scoring outfit. But Blake, if you had to go about winning your games in the playoffs, if your formula for victory was being great defensively down center ice with that big, robust defense and a terrific Thatcher Demko in goal, and just winning low scoring games when you happen to score, whether it's Miller and Besser, whether it's this sagging power play, which continues to sag, or whether it's, you know, just getting good old fashioned even strength goals from some of the lines that you do fashion 5-on-5. Like, is that a crazy formula for the Canucks that you could change that dramatically in the course of one season after adding a top two center to the mix? Is that,
it's not ridiculous to think that that's how they might end up going about it. I mean,
because what the narrative that is now at hand is that you moved out a defensively poor player in Kuzmenko for a defensively solid player in Elias Lindholm. And that's kind of the big change you've made to your team there. I know you felt like you were going to probably maintain or get better offensively in that trade, but it's really only worked the one way.
Yeah.
Because they have been a pretty good defensive outfit since the Lindholm trade.
And we got the lines up on the screen here for those watching on YouTube.
More visual thing. Hughes, Hronek, Susie, Zadorov, Cole Myers. We didn't touch on the defense.
I say that because there are 4 Vancouver Canucks who have more than one goal since the All-Star break. And that's now 19 games, everybody. That's nearly a quarter of the NHL season. Mm-hmm. Miller is 9. Hoglander has 6. Besser has 5. Petey has 4. Everybody else has 1 or 0.
Yeah.
Including Pius Suter, who's, oh, you took the lines down. Including, who's Suter playing with now?
Suter's with Miller and Besser.
Okay. Including Ilya Mikheyev, who, of course, got off that big schneid.
Mm-hmm.
Including Connor Garland.
Yeah, I mean, if you...
So you've got 1 goal guys on the wing of all 3 of those top 3 lines.
Who do you feel better about, though? You know, the top 6 as you saw it there, or, you know, EP40, Lindholm, and Garland with Hoglander, Miller, and Besser? And then... You know, you, or maybe you drop Garland off and just make sure that that third line is kept together. Maybe you go back to Bluger with Garland.
Well, when Joshua gets back, I do think you have to take a look at Bluger, Joshua, Garland, because they had been so good.
Yeah.
Previously.
You know it'll go. And then,
well, you hope it'll go.
And then you can press the other guys into the top 6.
Mm-hmm.
But
you know it's had success, and that does help in your mission to compress the top 6. We should also... note the change on defense there with Susie and Zadorov and Cole in Myers. Previously, Susie with Myers and Cole and Zadorov. Zadorov, the lefty, playing the right side. In what we think is their best 6, and look, either one of the, either Susie with Zadorov or Cole with Zadorov on the right side, I do think becomes your game 1 Stanley Cup playoff opening night defense alignment.
Vasily Podkolzin has looked good, you know, to the eye test, but no bottom line there.
No points.
You know, is it time to try a different option there? Atu Ratu had a really nice game last night down
on
the farm.
We'll get to it. Yep.
So, you know, like, are you at that level? Are you at that level of desperation where you're going to go down and look for a kid to give you an offensive jump? I'm guessing that's probably not advisable.
Our top story today, urgency versus non-urgency. Canucks lose to Washington. Petey stays quiet. 2-1, the Capitals come in here and beat the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday night. That's a desperate team that feels the urgency on the periphery of the Eastern Conference playoff race, whereas Vancouver remains fat and happy atop the Pacific Division and the West, now just 1 point ahead of Winnipeg, Dallas, and Colorado. Boy, quite a derby going on in the Central, huh?
Mm-hmm.
With those 3. They're 8 up in on Edmonton, but the Oilers have 3 games in hand. If they were to win them out and then beat Vancouver in the head-to-head that's remaining, this could still be a battle for the Pacific Division. 4th in the league by points behind Boston, the Rangers, and Florida. 5th in the league by points percentage. The Jets are actually better than them by points percentage. Elias Pettersson continues to struggle. Look, not a lot of points when you only score 1 game. Here's head coach Rick Tocchet on Elias's recent struggles.
He struggled. I mean, you guys know. You know, he's just trying to find his way. You know, he's got to push through it. We, you know, he knows we need more from him. He knows it. There's nothing really more to said. He's got to work hard. You know, he's got to work every day to break through it.
And one of the things that we're approaching here with Elias, and we heard this under old coach Travis Green, the Canucks have several players who are sensitive sorts, don't love hearing coach criticize them publicly. So Tocchet has to walk a narrow line here with Pettersson. But he's not wrong, and he's been an honest communicator with us all year. And I think he's absolutely right that you're at the point where you got to fight through it. And fighting through it on the ice has been something you've been talking about for a while here, Blake. Doesn't stay on his feet as much as he'd like. Fighting the puck
to me that's the bigger one. I you know, a lot of people could get dragged into the, oh, he falls down a lot. To me, that's never really been an issue for me. It's the fighting of the puck. And I go back to the Botchfordism of bro, do your deeks. Bro can't deek right now. You know, it's jumping a foot off the ice at times when he's trying to stick handle. Like, it's inexplicable. And this isn't the player, it's something he's going through right now. But his touch of the puck, I don't get it.
Touches.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's just cement hands right now from a guy who's had silky mitts through much of his career.
And of course, we're not too, look, sky's not falling. We're not too far removed from that four-game win streak when they gave up almost nothing through California.
And they still haven't.
And with the Vegas Golden Knights, and really haven't given up a ton since. I mean, four goals to Colorado after getting up 3-0 was disappointing.
But that's three goals in regulation. It's and two more against Washington. Right. I mean, the defense is still there.
So when Tocchet talks about how it's a low event, not many shots, not many chances on the inside, lots of missed shots, and that was the storyline for the Canucks Saturday. Okay. But it's also a one-shot game. Right? And you lose by a goal. These are the sorts of playoff tests that are going to be upon them here as they head down the stretch drive. 14 games to go. They play their final two games against the Eastern Conference this week. Tuesday home here to Buffalo, of course, and Thursday home to Montreal as part of this nine-game homestand. Now 1-1-1 on said homestand. And the bigger thing, before we get into the linesman and the missed icing, the bigger thing, manufacturing urgency, as we said off the top on this story. Here's head coach, because this clip standed out. This message from Tocchet stood out Saturday after the proceedings. Take a listen.
Well, if I got to manufacture it right now, this time, I mean, we're in trouble. Like, I mean, we've had some battle drills, a manufactured practice, so you got to do it for the game. And we got to get inside. We were just way too much on the outside, way too much on the outside tonight.
And I can understand Coach's frustration because he did implement some of those drills that were designed to create urgency, fix some of the details that were sagging in their game. By the same token, Blake, I think it's a little bit of human nature that it's a long 82-game schedule. You have played very well up until this point. You're at home, and sometimes the comforts of home can deliver a bit of
I was gonna get into that. Like, I saw the nine-game homestand, we all did, early, and I thought to myself, and I didn't want to come up with this too early because it sounds great. You know, Canucks got a great home record. Why wouldn't you want nine straight games at home? And as exhausting as the furious pace of hockey has been, the Canucks have been amongst the games played leaders just by virtue of the schedule for much of this season. They've been at the top of the league in terms of games under their belt already. But I did wonder, when that came crashing to a halt here in the beginning of March, it means a change, big change in routine with all these days off in between. Practice is good in a theoretical sense. And eventually, the practices that the Canucks are having, there will be fruits for this labor. But in the immediate right now, it means that you're not in that game ready mode. And now they've started well. So it's not like they're rusty and it takes some time to rev up. But I think they've been in running, they call it being stretched out. You know, if you're going to run a marathon, you got to stretch out your distances so that they're not being stretched out right now. And maybe they're kind of losing some of that refinement at the end of the game. A little bit of that sharpness is gone because you're not in a game situation every other night. So I think this week was a weird one for them to have only the two games with 5 days off of game action and a few days off of the ice entirely. And it's going to be needed in the long run. But I think in the short term, it takes some of the edge off of this team. This week starts the happy middle ground here. They're playing a lot, but they're still at home. So you don't get the rigors of travel, but starting tomorrow night, they're game on, day off, game on, day off for the next four games.
I would bet NHL coaches hate that second and in some cases third day off at home during a homestand.
You're a little idle. You know, like it's a little bit of rattling around. It's good for the players, for the rest, humans, yeah. and you get to see your significant others and kids if they have them and all that sort of stuff. So,
but it's not the same sharp focus as when you're on the road, going city to city, or team event to team event. Understanding that you've got a job to do and there's a regimented schedule before you.
And I'm not saying that the team shouldn't have it, because I think again, it'll bear fruit in the long term.
Yep.
But right now, I think if the losing continues through this four-game stretch, they've got issues because the strength of schedule is not that hard in the next four. And
absolutely not. And this should be a win. This, you talk about winning the week. Well, they lost last week.
Yep.
This should be a week that they win, and frankly, quite handily.
Well, I break up this night because it's nine games. It's a little unruly. I'd count this as a new four-game homestand. They just went 1-1-1 in the first three-game homestand. Here's another four-game homestand. They got to go 3-1. They've got to go 3-1.
Second longest homestand in the history of the hockey club. Here's the other thing. They have been in the Pacific time zone since getting back from Denver on February 20th, 21st, after the loss to Colorado. They do not leave the Pacific time zone again until April 13th, when they go play the Edmonton Oilers, the third to last game of the regular season. So body clock should be A-OK here. We know the Canucks have struggled before, and Sleep Doctor in the Gillis era taught us about what jumping time zones can do to fatigue levels. There's no excuse there when you can sit there and say, we're going nearly 2 months in the same time zone. So we'll see what they have against Buffalo, who's playing better hockey Tuesday coming in here to Rogers Arena. Okay. Linesman missed the call, missed icing, PDG in pursuit. Talkett said the linesman apologized to him before the beginning of the third period. It happens. That's a tough call to make. It's typically a call where the linesman is going to call it icing, you know, more time, or they get sometimes stuck in their ways there with that call.
He was right where he needed to be to make the call, too.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But I think what's important, because they have had the wrong share of the officials' whistles here for some time, or at least have had periods, he noted plenty of time left.
Yeah.
Wally Bono rule. Don't put yourself in a position where at the end of the game, you're bemoaning one call or one missed call as a reason you lost the game.
Yeah. Yeah. There,
and professionals are going to get that all the time. What separates good from great, those that play through, those that park it, go, all right, it's like golf, bad shot, park it, on to the next one.
And they got the face-off win, too, so they got an opportunity then to get out from underneath the bad call and couldn't do it. So, I don't think you can lean on that. Unfortunate call, but that's not the reason for the loss.
If Ian Cole clears that puck out, nobody is having that conversation.
It's over. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People just want to look something, an easy target like the refs to blame, when they should look in front of their own eyes and realize, well, a blind pass up the boards like that on the backhand without looking, probably not a good way to clear the zone.
Yeah, and unlike the period following the Winnipeg game here at home, which got a little nasty and where Tyler Meyer cited, we felt like we were playing two teams, I don't think you put this one on NHL referees intent on retribution. This was just a missed call.
Yeah.
No, nothing more to it.
No conspiracy theories.
Speaking of Myers, he returned to the Vancouver Canucks lineup. And with Carson Soucy, although today at practice with Ian Cole, you tell me, you like Zadorov on the right side in terms of the lefties, and do you think that's the best alignment for this defensive six as they head into the playoffs?
I maintain my scouting report on Zadorov, which is, it's going to be marvelous or it's going to be terrible. He's capable of both of them. So, you know, that level of responsibility, if we're going to read into the Cole Myers pairing being the sort of the third pairing in terms of priority and time, we'll see what Zadorov does with it. Yeah. I mean, he's...
Well, Soucy Zadorov played the fewest minutes Saturday. Soucy played 15:44. Zadorov played 15:30. I mean, well, Myers thrown right back in, played 1953.
Yeah.
So at least the way he's got them structured at practice today is the way the time on ice share played out on Saturday against Washington.
So if they're the third pair, in terms of
Soucy Zadorov would be the third pair.
Yeah.
Which
is interesting because they, you know, Soucy had looked so good in the first few games back. It looked like he was going to be a priority shutdown guy, but maybe not the case here right now.
Yeah. Is it painfully obvious to you that they need a winger and they should have done everything they could to get a winger by trade deadline?
Did you see Tyler Toffoli's last couple of games?
I did. Two-goal games in a row here for
5 points now. Even if you include the two outages when he first was acquired, he's got 5 points in four games as a Jet with 4 goals in four games. And, hey, that would have taken some back flips to make happen. because he
would he go for a second and a third? Second and a fourth?
But they had the cap space. So the Canucks would have needed to create cap space. So right. It would have been a more difficult deal to swing for the Vancouver Canucks at that point, but my goodness. I mean, there you go,
50%
folks.
Retained by the Devils to get a second and a third round pick out of Winnipeg. The third this year, the second.
Yeah, they probably would have had to move a contract to get even a minimum contract to still get that last few hundred grand of room, I think, to squeeze him in. Mm-hmm. But he'd look really good. He'd look really good in this lineup right now. Can you imagine getting Joshua back with Toffoli already into the fold? It would be, yeah. It would feel like everybody slots in.
Yeah. The one thing that I'm seeing less and less, though, and hearing less and less, and I think this is the correct take, is the whole notion of Lindholm was our trade deadline addition, and that's fine. I, you know, as I scan my timeline on social media, I'm seeing more and more people look at it and go, one more piece here.
Well, that would have been reactive to one the Lindholm outage, though, right? Like, if Lindholm's producing right now, Matt, I do believe.
Oh, of course, but he's not. So right. The facts in front of us are that you've added a guy who really hasn't done much offensively.
No.
So, and this was evident in the run-up to the trade deadline. This is why Rutherford and Alvin were out there, as public as they were, talking about wanting to add a wing.
Well, the other concern is
this
that
why Lindholm Alvin was doing like
Lindholm was performing like this in Calgary too. So they actually, you know, their most recent sample size of Elias Lindholm in Calgary was this player struggling to get points on the board. And I think they thought, oh, that's a product of the situation, not the player. And yet they've put him into a better situation, you would think. And yet it's the same. Although, you can make the argument, this is not a better situation than what he had in Calgary. If you're giving him Lafferty and McKayev as line mates, you could make the argument that's a tougher assignment for Elias Lindholm than what he was playing with in Calgary. So another reason, and I'm going to keep ranting on this until it happens, you know, win some games, compress your top skill into two lines and go out and win a couple of games. Score goals from players that you know can score goals and try to find depth when you've got Joshua back in the lineup.
Well, it's funny because when we were at Park Casino last week, there was a whole lot of optimism and feel good. And yeah, we've had another blip there, but we've now won four in a row and have nine at home. And shout out to everyone at Park and BC Kitchen. You get 15% off the game day menu with your game.
And again, not unsalvageable. Nine game homestand. No. They're 1-1-1. So you win two in a row. You can do your 3-1-1, and all of a sudden that sounds fine, you know? One night without points.
I guess my point was the immediate aftermath of no addition at the trade deadline, I think, was water off a lot of Canucks fans' backs. I'm now starting to see wish we had done a little bit more at the trade deadline.
After, and again, expectations have been raised and there's been no playoffs for so long. I knew it was going to play out this way, that Canucks fans, no matter what happened in the final 20 games, there was going to be a micro analysis of what this team looks like, because there hasn't been a whole lot of doom and gloom this season. There hasn't been a whole lot of fear and angst.
Nope.
And at the very closest sign of it, you knew there was going to be some.
And in a lot of cases, that is Canucks fans' resting state.
Yeah, right. So if you've got an opportunity to have angst, take it, you know? And they are.
Hey, there was a 4-game losing streak. There was 6-7.
And
got angsty around
here. And Matt, I'm not belittling the problems, because I do think there's concerns here. But they're in the playoffs. So that concern is alleviated. They're in the playoffs. But you want, a 5-game exit, I don't think anybody wants to see that. So these are the finer points that you're tweaking here to make sure that it's not a 5-game exit.
That's the other thing that I see now being somewhat of a debate amongst Canucks fans is the entirety of the playoffs gravy, because at the beginning of the year you were just hoping to sneak in, or did expectations change for you when the Canucks authored this sensational season, which has been up around the top of the league standings for most of the year, not to mention the Pacific Division over a couple of teams that we did not feel at the beginning of the year were in the same stratosphere as the Vancouver Canucks. And yet there they've been all year, most of the year, better than the Edmonton Oilers, better than the defending Stanley Cup champion Vegas Golden Knights.
Mine have, but within reason. Like I have heard, I've talked to people who've been like, oh, well, they better win a couple of rounds. That's a big demand on a team that hasn't been here in a decade, really. I would love to see them win a round to energize this city and give this city a good jolt. Mm-hmm. But asking them to make the Final Four because they've been at such a lofty position all league long, like I don't see that connectivity.
I do think you got to win a round.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Round is a reasonable expectation of this team.
Incidentally, we're going to Vegas this weekend, and we're plotting out our activities. And she says to me, oh, is the hockey on? Do you want to go to a hockey game?
Did she call it the hockey? Like that?
I just turned at her and she's like, oh, right.
ABV.
ABV.
See, other
I'm
people. Like,
I'm not traveling to that city to go watch hockey.
Somehow I went down the rabbit hole.
You want to go to a Canucks game here? We'll go to a Canucks game here.
You don't want to line the pockets of Bill Foley?
I accidentally locked into some Alberta Twitter.
I do not want to.
And they
associate myself with
Alberta
that
Twitter has ABV too, only they're referring to Vancouver.
What?
Yeah. I got into some of the mentions of an Oiler or Flames
Vegas,
thing, and their whole thing was, no, anybody but Vancouver. Literally, that was taken out.
Vegas beat the Oilers last year in the playoffs.
No, but they were just talking about, it was leading up to the trade deadline, I think, and people were trying to make sure that Vancouver didn't load up anymore, and they're like, it was
responsible. Because the Canucks blew the doors off the Oilers in three games earlier this year?
Yeah.
So that is more recent than the second-round loss to Vegas last year for at least Northern Alberta.
Also, I think there's doubt in their minds as to whether or not they can beat Vegas. And I think that they feel confident they can beat Vancouver.
What would give you that impression, Edmonton, after 0-3?
They feel like that's a different team since October.
Right. Yeah. What's the goal differential in the three-game series? It's big. It's 6-3, 8-1.
Amidst all the fighting between the tribes, both sides have got good points. Like, I think Edmonton is a different team than they were in October. I think emphatically.
8-1, 4-3,
6-2. Yeah, but they've got a good roll going right now.
That's 18-6. It's an average score of 6-2.
You're that confident, huh?
No, I'm playing that up a little bit. They are absolutely a different team.
One loss in 10 right now.
They're absolutely a different team. Mm-hmm. And yet there's a part of me that still finds Vegas a little scarier, even where Vegas is.
The pedigree, absolutely.
The size.
And the ability to drop in off the injured list.
And as well as he's played since early in the season, Aiden Hill over Skinner in a pressure game in the Stanley Cup playoffs, I think I'd still take Hill.
Yeah, Hill's not been that great right now.
No,
so there's room for improvement there.
And yet we see it every year in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's not the credentialed goalie.
Nope.
It's the goalie who's playing well in that moment. The Stanley Cup playoffs don't care about how many Vezina votes you have gotten in previous years. How are you playing in this moment?
We say that about Aiden Hill. His save percentage is .917.
No, it's pretty damn good too.
Yeah, so he's doing just fine.
Yeah. Let's take a moment to peek down to the farm, because boy, what a sensational victory for the Abbotsford Canucks on St. Patty's Day. They beat Henderson, the Vegas Golden Knights farm team, 8-3. Atu Ratu with 2 goals and 2 assists for 4 points in the first period.
Yeah.
There were 5 other baby Canucks who had multi-point games, including Akito Hiroshi, who gets his first AHL points in 23 games played this year. A lot of franchise records were set here, including Ratu with the 4 points in a period.
Philip Johansson had 3 assists.
Abbotsford is in 6th place in the in their division in the American Hockey League on 68 points. They're 4 points out of 3rd place. It's quite a logjam there in the Pacific Division between the Colorado Club at 72 points on 3rd, and then the Ontario Reign, LA's farm team, Bakersfield, Edmonton's farm team, and Abbotsford. at 69, 68 points, and then Calgary closing in at 66 points, but with games in hand against Abbotsford and against Ontario. So it'll be interesting to see what shakes out playoff-wise there. Of course, you're always hoping to go to the Calder Cup playoffs. It gives your young prospects more opportunity, and not to mention, you know, guys who may circle in late, like EPD, right? Elias Pettersson, the defenseman. And they got quite a logjam on defense there. EPD, Irwin, Hirose, Brisebois, Wolanin,
McWard, Johansson. Those
are the right side guys.
The left side
guys in particular is quite a logjam there.
Dave Hall had an amazing stat from the AHL Canucks.
Yes.
In back-to-back games. Army. Mm-hmm. 1-13 in the opener of two-game series.
I know.
10-2-1 in game two. Almost winless in the opener, almost undefeated in the closer.
That's crazy. 1-13.
So again, as we talk about Rick Tocchet trying to get his team to have urgency, can you imagine Jeremy Calton going into the first game of a head-to-head going, guy, like let's say 3 games ago, yes, when they were 1-10. Guys,
maybe you're 6 games
ago. You're 1-10. Like, you haven't gotten up for the opener. Can we please, for the love of all that's holy, have a good one to 3 games later, still haven't won, or 1-13 now.
Do we need to be punched in the mouth before we play our best?
Right.
Each and every time.
Every time.
Every time. And we're taking a haymaker off the jaw.
So this
early
is
in the round.
Like, coaching is an art. It is not a science. And like, I find that so fascinating because that is not lost in Jeremy Calton and his coaching staff, and they seemingly can do nothing about it. It's unbelievable.
Tom Wielander, a second-team all-conference player in the Hockey East at Boston University, 4 goals, 18 assists, 22 points in 33 games, was a plus 24 in his freshman season for the Terriers, who are a pretty good team and may well make a run for the NCAA Frozen Four. And then there's the Vancouver Giants. Did you see this, Blake? Cameron Schmidt scored his 30th goal of the season.
My goodness.
He's just the 7th player in the last 30 years in the Dub to score 30 times as a 16-year-old. Still some league games to go. Final week of WHL regular season. Playoff field not set in terms of pairings and matchups, but we do know from our province, Prince George, Vancouver, Victoria, and Kelowna are all going to make the playoffs. The last Kamloops did not after going all in last year when they were hosting the Mem Cup. Anyways, the regular season ends on Sunday, so a chance to see some playoff hockey here in the Dub on both sides of the Georgia Strait, not to mention all the way up in Prince George, where they are feeling awfully good about one of the best seasons the Cougars have had there, with a bunch of terrific players and top NHL draft picks.
So Cameron Schmidt's going to be a player to watch leading up to 2025
draft eligible there.
So, yes.
Not a late birthday.
I think I saw Craig Button talking about him in the 25.
There are actually some pretty darn good looking prospects coming up in the next few drafts.
So this is what I'm saying about expansion. Like, I honestly think that the NHL could, from a talent standpoint, accept two more teams and they'd be okay, because it's a great era of talent right now in the National Hockey League.
15-year-old Gavin McKenna with 91 points in 59 games for the Medicine Hat Tigers and our buddy Willie Desjardins this past year.
Bedard's cousin.
That's right. You told us that the first time we talked about him. Anyways, let's get to today's menu. It is brought to you by Greta 50 West Cordova, a fantastic spot to hit up prior to the game, after the game, hang out during the game. They got the arcade there, all sorts of fun. Quick walk to the Rinker Stadium, go-to spot for food, drinks, and fun. Make it a game night at Greta 50 West Cordova and at gretabar.com. We got JPAT coming up. Oh, all sorts of topics with Jeff, including his latest column for Canucks Army on urgency, on our poll question, Elias, who needs to step it up, Myers in the defense score, the week ahead, the need for a winger, Dakota Joshua. I mean, your third line left winger shouldn't matter that much, but 6-6-2 without Dakota Joshua in the lineup. We'll get to some hashtags, the best and worst of Twitter. Maybe an all-time weekend for the position of goalie in hockey. A couple of unbelievable goaltender performances from around this world in hockey. We will also talk about NHL scouts being left at the door.
Oh, boy, thanks.
At a recent hockey tournament.
Wherever should they go?
And shout out some UBC Thunderbirds. Plus, we'll get to the Whitecaps with a terrific, solid victory. The undefeated Whitecaps coming home here on Saturday. Not to mention more football, more quarterback movement south of the border. Garrison Price from Wall Center, presentation Applewood Auto Group.
At Applewood Nissan in Langley, the best deals of the season, like the Nissan Qashqai, financed at a 2.99%, up to 36 months, or get the Leaf, up to $13,000 cash back, including rebates. It's all good at Applewood.
Tim Horton's poll question today asking you, who needs to step it up more? Elias Lindholm, Elias Pettersson, you can vote at Garrison Price on Twitter and YouTube. Speaking of Twitter, hashtags best and worst of Twitter.com, Blake, and I'm going to lead us off. It was an extraordinary weekend for hockey goalies. At Daily Faceoff, listen up, Grady Sass goalie guy. Russian goalie Artemi Pleshkov sets pro hockey world record with a 124-save game. This is the VHL playoffs, the second division of Russian hockey. Pleshkov and his team lose 1-0 in quintuple overtime. He shut out his opponents for more than 157 minutes before surrendering the only goal of the game. It eliminated his SKA Neva St. Petersburg team from the playoffs. His final save percentage, turning away 124 of 125 shots, 9.992. You may remember Blake Eunice Korpisalo in the 85 save game in the National Hockey League playoffs. There was also Alexander Borodulia, who had a 107 save effort in the Belarusian Extra League playoffs. Yeah, who doesn't? Yeah. I mean, Borodulia.
The Belarusian.
Mm-hmm.
Remember it like it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the only extraordinary goalie performance of the weekend.
My beer league last
I
night?
Take you to Division III hockey playoffs, NCAA. Curry College goaltender Shane Soderwall, 98 saves in a quarterfinal loss to defending national champion Hobart, made 61 saves in a row before giving up the game winner 5 hours after puck drop. The time of the game, 1 hour, this is in periods, time on ice, 1 hour, 135 minutes and 17 seconds, the second longest game in NCAA history. 98 saves by Soderwall ties for second all-time in NCAA history. Sirena Enright with 101 saves for Chatham in Division III women's hockey back in 2005. So, a 98-save effort, 124-save efforts on the weekend. Shout out Soderwall and shout out Pleshkov for your efforts.
Whilst we're being thematic,
mm-hmm.
I'll go to the world of soccer and some crazy endings.
I watched FA Cup yesterday and it was extraordinary.
Well, there was the good game with United, but
it was incredible entertainment.
But the crazy ending was Coventry and Wolves. As Coventry fights above its weight class. They led 1-0 up until the 82nd minute. Wolves tie it in the 83rd. Wolves lead in the 88th, only to give up the tying goal in the 7th minute of stoppage time, losing it then in the 10th minute of stoppage time. Four goals from the 83rd minute on. So what was 1-0 in the 82nd minute becomes a 3-2 full-time final with no extra time played. I mean, it's just crazy. But that's not the one I was going to highlight. Instead, going to MLS for this little ditty at Raskin Daily Mail. Alex Raskin. Chicago's Windy City nickname has nothing to do with the wind, but rather 19th century politicians' reputation for being profit-hungry blowhards. Just don't tell CF Montreal keeper Jonathan Sirois, who yielded a wild wind-aided goal on Saturday. Same idea. CF Montreal led 3-1 in the 82nd minute. Boy, same thing. Same minute.
Mm-hmm.
The craziness begins in minute 83. Chicago was trailing 3-1 in the 82nd minute. They won it 4-3.
Beware the Ides of March in the 83rd minute.
And the winner came from midfield. Kellen Acosta punts it straight up in the air. And apparently there was a wind gust in that very moment of 40 miles an hour.
The video is extraordinary.
And Jonathan Sirois can't do anything about it. He was able to volley it like a volleyball player, but it went behind him nonetheless. And that was the winner.
Reminded me of that CFL playoff game in Hamilton a few years back where even the extra point just went zooming in one direction. that is a clip that will live for days. Also, did you see the own goal in FA Cup?
Yeah.
For midfield? Chelsea just cruising along against Leicester. Play it back to the keeper. Oh, he's come out. There's an own goal. Leicester forges equal at 2-2 and then gives up two in added time to lose. You mentioned Man United and Liverpool. What extraordinary entertainment that was. Mm-hmm. I mean, Man U scoring in the 87th minute to tie. Then Rashford has an unbelievable chance and somehow taps it wide. Then Rashford gains redemption after he ties it 3-3. Beyond 90 minutes, and then Liverpool scores the winner at the def. It was an incredible weekend for soccer everywhere, here, England, and beyond. At Ben Steiner 00, Ben, local guy covering U Sport, has done an amazing job covering U Sport as well. A rarity at events. NHL and AHL scouts are being charged to attend the U Cup in Toronto. $180 for scout access has pushed several scouts and GMs away from the tournament. Six NHL clubs were represented. High prices for fans, too. Here's the story in Ben's 49sport.com is your website here, at 49sportnet on Twitter.
By the way, not many better people covering U Sports.
Ben's a sensational guy all around. So the Jets, Canadians, Predators, Wild, Senators, and Oilers got into the building. Some NHL teams and their AHL affiliates did not. Why? They balked at the $180 price tag to get in. U Sports set it up where, okay, you want to come scout, and I believe there's a goaltender who has signed here with the Edmonton Oilers. You want to come in and look at these? Well, it's not free. No, it'll be $180. It's part of sort of a bigger outlay from U Sport here. Cheapest entry point for fans was $31 to get in. No student discount to watch U Sport hockey. 1,281 fans attended the opening game, Toronto Metropolitan University, on Thursday night. And there was a last-minute free giveaway to students when they realized, maybe we may
no
have
one's
over,
coming.
Yeah, we already struggle with attendance numbers. Let's
the event.
Let's up the price.
If you've never been to University Cup, it is a fun.
Oh, it is fun
event. But you have to be able to create some fun, and charging professional prices is not going to do it.
U Sport hockey is not worth. Well, I mean, maybe the best seats are worth $30. But the get-in price should not be $30.
And ultimately, are you doing your athletes any favors by chasing away the scouts? Like, I know people are like, well, they can afford it. Yeah, they can.
Yeah, they can.
But it's the principle of the thing. And ultimately, if the consequence is that a bunch of teams are just being like, well, okay, we're not going to come then, the principle is lost, and you've only done a disservice to the athletes.
I hear you. I would also like to think that NHL clubs and scouts should look at it and go, we're supporting hockey at all levels. $180 is nothing for us. It's meaningful for them.
Unless you're the Arizona Coyotes.
Right. Incidentally, the UNB Reds won and finished a perfect season, 43-0.
Wow.
Was that the team that didn't allow a goal in the championship, like the semifinals and finals or something like that?
They ran the tape 30-0 in the regular season, 5-0 at a conference, 5-0 in the Atlantic Sports Playoffs, 3-0 at U Cup. Didn't allow a goal at Nationals. That's Gardner McDougal, he of the trademark mustache, head coach at UNB.
Mm.
All they do is win titles.
At Alex Gungaruzich, after a lot of hype for a new Canadian kit for 2024, we've got what looks like some sort of retail uniform. Maybe it'll grow on me, but it looks so clunky with the off-color sleeves, weird color, and oddly circled Nike logo. As an aside, I'm not sure what this meant. The aside means. But Canada unveiling both a new home and away kit. I'm assuming they're going to wear this in their big game versus Trinidad and Tobago next week.
Mm-hmm.
The red one absolutely looks like fan wear.
Saturday, isn't it?
The white one looks quite good. Mm-hmm. It's got pinstripes down the middle, 13 pinstripes representing the provinces and territories, so it's got some purpose behind it as well. Don't mind the white one at all. The red one looks weird. And the downside for a lot of people is that the Nike logo is right above the Canadian logo in the center of the chest, and it's almost the same size. So, like, you're almost giving Nike as much love as you are the country. So it not ideal there either. And, of course, a common complaint here is, how come these weren't ready for the World Cup last year?
Is everything okay with Alfonso Davies' dental work? Is he going to be playing Saturday? I know he's
on the team. I haven't heard any updates on whether or not he would be unable to play. So,
okay,
yeah,
good. Need him. Looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. And lastly, for me, staying with U-Sport at UBC T-Birds. UBC stays golden as the T-Birds win their second straight women's volleyball championship in four sets over the Alberta Pandas. It's they won it at McMaster in Hamilton. It's the 14th time they have won this championship in program history. Coach Doug Reimer, 12 national championships, 11 at UBC. Lucy Borowski is the tournament MVP. And shout out Casey Jost, who wins her third championship and is a tournament all-star in her final game with UBC. We know her brother, Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, former Penticton V. And the UBC men narrowly missed making it a sweep of the V-ball championships. They win bronze at Queens, defeating the host Golden Gales. They lost to U of A in the semis. Nevertheless, a power UBC volleyball. Congratulations to everyone at the Point Grey campus. That's hashtags for today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Rinkwide Jeff Patterson is our Canucks reporter. He took in the defeat to the Washington Capitals on Saturday and has penned for Canucks Army. Talk its tone changes in wake of consecutive letdown losses for the Canucks. He joins us now. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, guys.
Yeah, we heard Coach talk it earlier in the show, talking about urgency and manufacturing urgency, and he can't manufacture urgency for these guys. Jeff, tell us about your call.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the quote that really jumped out at me post-game, was that he was asked about, how do you go about getting your guys to, you know, when momentum is slipping away or the game is sort of spinning its wheels, how do you get that intensity? And he said, if I have to manufacture that, we're in trouble. There's 14 games to go, guys. Like, come playoff time, they're going to be down in hockey games. They're going to be trailing going to the third period. Like, it just feels like the Colorado game and this game against Washington, there was a slight shift in his tone. And there were a couple other quotes, the break the seal thing, where he talked about, guys just have to figure out that there is more there. Whether they believe it or not, they've got to dig deeper. And I don't know, I just, listening to him in the aftermath, and I went back again on Sunday and listened to it again, just to make sure that I, wasn't mishearing it in the moments after the game. And he sounds like a guy that is sounding the alarm a little bit here, with a month to go before the playoffs, that he has sensed that, and it's not just these two games. And I wrote about this. In fact, there was the lead of the column. They've lost more than they've won since the All-Star break. Like, I don't know if people recognize that, but they're 9-7-3, but that's 9 wins and 10 losses. And that's not a formidable foe for anybody in the playoffs. If they limp into the playoffs, basically 500 over their final 35 or 40 games, they're going to be a playoff team. And at the outset of the season, I think that was the bar. But I've also seen a number of people on social saying, there were no expectations on this group. Like, let's just see how it goes. No, I think expectations change over the season. A team doesn't make the Nikita Zadorov deal. They don't make the Elias Lindholm trade if they as an organization don't believe that what they've accomplished is going to allow them to at least believe they can make some noise come playoff time. So I think the coach has just sensed that, you look at the two goals the other night against Washington, guys, the staples, like, it's kind of become a punchline. I get that. But I mean, Rick Tocchet believes in those staples and the Canucks getting away from them. Both of them just, bad defensive turnovers that lead to goals for the other team, not taking out guys in front of the net, not taking the middle of the ice, board battles, all those types of things. And one of the other comments that Tocchet made that I thought was really interesting was, he said he felt like guys were just standing around waiting for somebody else to do the job. And if you watch that game start to finish on Saturday night, I would agree with him 100% that they just didn't look like a team that was totally invested in making the things necessary to get the result. And as a result, they didn't. I mean, they end up losing, and that's back-to-back losses. They got a single point against Colorado. But yeah, if that was the bounce-back game against Washington on Saturday, then not much of a bounce-back at all.
JT Miller's got bottom line, so he escapes a lot of criticism, and he just passes a lot of the eye test, stuff as well. Not so for Elias and Elias, who don't have much of a bottom line lately, and also their eye tests are a little bit more difficult to pin down on. It's there if you're told what to look for, but for the casual fan that's just looking for noise, they're not going to see a lot of it from those two particular guys. So per the Tim Hortons poll question, is there one guy that draws a little more ire than the other in your eyes, or are they about even?
Yeah, I mean, the easy way out would be say both. But we know what Elias Pettersson means to this hockey club, and it's just not there for him right now. And that's not to say that it won't be there come playoff time. Like, he performed in the bubble, and I think that's what has to give people hope, is that when the chips are truly down, that he will be able to elevate his game. But yeah, I mean, really since the All-Star break, there just hasn't been a lot of there. That there have been a couple of nights, the big nights have been few and far between. And the big nights, I think he has 2 3-point nights, both of them against Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. And those have padded his stats. But if you take those nights out, it doesn't leave an awful lot there. So I just want to leave the building on some of these nights here down the stretch thinking, like, okay, even if he doesn't score, like, some of that Petey magic, some of the, there are memorable plays that give me an indication that he's taking over games and situations, and we just haven't seen that. Elias Lindholm, yeah, offensively, massive disappointment so far. Again, they didn't get him necessarily to be a difference maker in March. I mean, the proof will be in the pudding come playoff time. I think the other thing, too, for Lindholm is maybe we gauge him too much against his best NHL season or seasons. He's had two high-scoring seasons in Calgary. Otherwise, if you look at his numbers, he's essentially a sort of a 50-point guy that can help you in other areas. And that's probably a truer gauge of who he ultimately is. So, you know, there's penalty-killing utility. There are face-offs, and he's been really good on face-offs. But they didn't pay the package that they did to get a guy that can win them occasional face-offs. Like, that's value-added. They need more from him, there's no doubt. And this idea that everybody's just waiting for Dakota Joshua to come back, and I'm waiting for Dakota Joshua. Like, I want to see Dakota Joshua back in their lineup. They're a better team with him. But if the absence of one middle six winger means this much to this team, like, look around the NHL. Winnipeg was without Kyle Connor for a month. Like, they survived that. You know, Florida started the season without its top two defensemen, and look at the Panthers now. You know, the Rangers missed Adam Fox for a while. Philip Hedel has been shut down for, like, other teams deal with this. And so this notion that one guy coming back is somehow the magic potion for the Vancouver Canucks, again, he's going to help, and he'll allow them to, you know, level out their lineup and move some other guys around. But I don't know. It just sort of feels too like maybe some guys are waiting for that day when Dakota Joshua gets back. It's 5 weeks now. The injury happened in Chicago. It's 5 weeks ago, and there's been no sign of him at practice recently. So I think this is going to turn out to be every bit of the 4 to 6 weeks, and, you know, four has sailed. So I think we're looking at a 6 week injury for Dakota Joshua.
Yeah. February 13th, it happened. The team is 6-6-2 in his absence. Jeff, is it also becoming painfully obvious that that pursuit of a winger in advance of the NHL trade deadline was needed for these Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, I think so. I think every time that this team goes out, and again on the power play too, that's another area. Like, you know, just 5-on-5, would you like a scoring winger for Elias Pettersson? Sure, and I'm sure he would as well, but you know, trade deadline's come and gone. And so what you see is what you get in terms of where they're going to find the solutions. It's going to have to come internally. I do think at some point you're going to see Lindholm elevated again. I can't imagine that that experiment is done. And I'm a little surprised, quite frankly, with the power play spinning its wheels. A third period power play against Colorado the other night at 3-3, nothing. A power play, the only power play in a 2-1 game in the third period the other night, nothing. And it's not a knock on Connor Garland, but I spent Friday out at UBC trying to ask both the coach and Garland, you know, what exactly is his role on that first unit? And I get that they've thrown a bunch of stuff against the wall here, but guys, the power play is 29th in the NHL since the All-Star break. Like, that should be red flag city for the Vancouver Canucks. And it is something that they're going to have to sort out here, because I don't want to see them limp into the playoffs with a power play that's running at about 15%. So I would swap Garland and put Lindholm back there and just tell them to figure it out. Like, just whatever it takes. Like, you know, did they get a couple of looks the other night against Washington? Pettersson had that chance. But, you know, Blake, how many times have we done this, right? I don't want to talk about chances in a 2-1 loss. I want to see pucks go in the net for the Vancouver Canucks. And it just kind of feels like, if that's the takeaway, that there was, oh, there was one chance on a power play in the third period. Not good enough. Not good enough for the Vancouver Canucks. So, yes. I mean, they're down more than an entire goal from the midway mark of the season. So the first half to the second half, they are down more than a full goal per game. And so much of that is a power play that scored just 8 times in 19 games since that All-Star break.
And never when they were high flying did I think we would be trotting out the old trope that we dealt with for years on this program. Winners talk about goals. Losers talk about chances. Yeah.
I just don't understand, Jeff, and you can correct me if you've seen it over a long stretch, but I don't know why they don't reset. Why don't they go back to December, turn the clock back to the lines and the power play that they had in December, with or without Lindholm? I mean, if you don't put Lindholm on the second unit and just go full reset to what you had in December, I'm game for that. You can't do it fully until Joshua is back. But certainly when Joshua is back, like, elevate Lindholm, reset the lineup. And we saw a little bit on the, I'm losing track if it was the late power play, the third period power play, in which game, in which you saw, again, Miller back to the left of Hughes again and skating downhill with the puck. But, you know, like, it worked. Why don't you just go back to, why did they try to fix something that wasn't really that broken?
Right. So the one power play the other night against the Capitals, yes, and they had Pia Suter out there, so they went with a left-hander, and we've seen that. Again, this sort of counts among the various looks that they have shown here in the last 6 weeks or so. I guess the obvious answer to your question is Blake Kuzmenko's not here, and we know his struggles, but he was part of that first-unit power play. for much of the season. And, you know, even if he didn't figure in the scoring, he was still part of a unit that had some success. But I'm with you. Like, they were a better team in the first half of the season. There's no question. And so at some point here, you'd think that Rick Tocchet would say, yeah, hey, what was working back then? Why don't we give some of that a shot? He had a full-throated answer the other day after one of the practices last week where somebody said, like, why not Lotto Line? Like, it worked for you in January. You guys ran roughshod on the league for a couple of weeks. And he said, like, Lotto Line's not the secret sauce here. Like, he said that other guys have to figure it out on their own. We've seen him go to Lotto Line late in hockey games here when they've been trailing. And, yeah, it hasn't been able to produce the goal that they're looking for, but I do think that there's some application for giving Elias Pettersson some elite level players to play with, because the guys that he's playing with have been quiet. Now Hoglander's had a nice season, I get that, but whoever else is on his wing, like Pia Suter's only goal since the All-Star break was the fifth goal in a 5-0 win against Winnipeg. That's not exactly, you know, nailing it in crunch time. And this isn't a knock on Pia Suter. I think there's a place for him in this lineup. I think he's been a good player at his price point, but he wasn't signed to be Elias Pettersson's wingman and certainly play in the top six. So, you know, they tried Lafferty there the other night. I thought it was interesting. In a game where the Canucks were scuffling along and there wasn't much happening, and the coach said afterwards, low event game, but it really felt like they spent a good portion of the second period trying to find something that was going to get the most out of Elias Pettersson. He played with Garland and Lindholm for a shift. He had Lafferty on his line. Like, they were moving pieces around, but, you know, still nothing there. I have to say, like, I quite frankly, I was surprised at the end of the night when I looked at the stat sheet, and Pettersson had 9 shot attempts. Like, it did not feel like he had the puck on his stick that much. Outside of that power play chance, I can't recall anything that really stuck out to me as a, you know, a really good look for him or from him. So, it's a concern. Like, it's just, it's gone on too long now. And when you think of the goals that they have scored and the fact that you can rattle them off the top of your head, it sort of underscores the point here. But, you know, Brock Besser scores the other night. Before that, Miller opened the scoring and Mikheyev in the first couple of minutes against Colorado. Like, really, they have one line and one line that is producing. And I don't know. I mean, I wrote over that in the column too. If you think you can go to the playoffs and make some noise as a one-line team with a pop gun power play, I would suggest that they've got something else coming. So, again, 14 games. There's still time here to iron some of this out. But, yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see what practice looks like here as they get back to work after a day off the ice on Sunday, because I do think you've got a coach that is starting to sense some issues with his hockey club.
Tyler Myers returned. I'd like your thoughts on that and the way they've now structured the defense. And Jeff, is this their best six? Like, is this how they want to line it up on night one of the Stanley Cup playoffs with Soucy beside Myers and Cole and Zadorov with Nikita playing the right side?
Yeah, look, they gave up 2 goals. So I think defensively they were fine the other night. The issue was that they couldn't generate enough offense. But Tyler Myers, after missing 5 games, gets back in there. He and Soucy played well when Soucy was back for the brief time in January. And yeah, I think this is their top six. And the coach mentioned again that, you know, he felt bad for Noah Juulsen because Juulsen's played well, but Noah Juulsen is a depth defender. When everybody else is healthy, he's their 7th guy and he's going to have to live with that. And I'm not sure that everybody's going to stay healthy. Now, I do expect that we will see some load management here over the remainder of the home stretch, but or the home stand rather, but no back-to-back. So these will all be coaches' decisions, and we'll see how it goes. And Ian Cole would seem like the most likely candidate at some point to sit down here. But, you know, how did they play defensively in a game where not much was happening and every error had the potential to be costly? Like, look at the goals. Like, a lot was made about the icing call, and the linesman blew it. Like, let's be honest, that was a bad mistake by a veteran linesman. Phil DiGiuseppe was winning that race, would have been the first to the puck. The Canucks got hosed on that call. But it comes back to my point that they're going to face some adversity in the playoffs. So it meant a face-off in their own zone. But Teddy Bluger wins that draw cleanly. And that's when the trouble starts. Ian Cole fires around the boards, and there was nobody there. And so, you know, Rick Tocchet talking about his board battles, you know, those staples. And then the second goal, Phil Hronek, and now he's in the spotlight, obviously, with his contract. You know, the high flip, but he doesn't get it out of the zone, and the Capitals keep it in. Like, he had full possession of the puck. So the Canucks were in possession of the puck on both of the Washington goals They've got to do a better job of breaking that puck out. So I thought Tyler Myers was fine. Like the guys that made the mistakes the other day, and he's had his nights where he has made some miscues, but I think they're happy to have him back, and he was all right. And, you know, again, it wasn't about defense the other night because I thought DeSmith was fine too. This is a team that they knew what they were getting in a Washington team that needs every point. I don't even know that the Capitals were all that desperate, guys. It was just that they were allowed to play their game, and the Canucks have to find a way to break through. And for all this talk about rest and recovery and the home stand in the month of March, they've scored one third period goal in the three games on the home stand. They've come out of the gates, lights out, like on fire.
The first period's been amazing.
They've opened the scoring in the first 2 minutes of all three of these games. And I don't know if that makes, like, maybe they think it's going to be easy. If you're, hey, first one's going in, it's going to be our night. You know, they padded the lead against Washington or Winnipeg. They did it again against Colorado to get to 3-0. But since that 3-0 lead against the Avs, Canucks have been outscored 6-1 on home ice and don't have a third period goal in either of these last two games against, you know, Colorado had played the night before and Washington was playing 3-4 and was a long way from home. So, I would say that with one win in the first three games, 3 points out of these first three games, this homestand has not exactly gone according to.
But that's where this standard is raised, right? Is, you know, this team is 4-1-1 in the last six games. They have allowed more than two goals in one of these games. And yet I think everybody feels a little bit uneasy. Like you would sign up every day, every time for a six game span in which one of those games you allow more than two goals. And yet it just doesn't feel very good right now for the Canucks.
Yeah, and really outside of the third period against Colorado, like they've played all right and certainly played well defensively on the homestand. And that was the key to the success out on the road trip, right? I mean, it wasn't that they exploded for a ton of offense. They had two 2-1 wins and a 3-1. They got that third goal like bonanza in Vegas, but it was holding their opponents to a single goal. And then they come home and they shut out Winnipeg. And so, a week ago when I was with you guys, like it did, it felt like they had turned a corner. It felt like rest and recovery was certainly playing into their advantage. And then look out, they've got all of these games remaining on the homestand. But some lessons to be learned about, first sign of adversity, the late second period goal against Colorado, the botched icing call, like that can't derail a good hockey club. It can't. And it did seem to be cause and effect there. I mean, the icing call, and 2 minutes later, a 1-0 lead is gone, and they're down 2-1. And then the Capitals were able to sort of establish the way that they wanted to play the rest of the game and make the Canucks, you know, dig and fight for every bit of ice. And that was what Tocchet said post-game as well, that guys just weren't, you know, really hammered down on the fact that the Canucks spent way too much against the Capitals on the outside. And I would agree with them. Like, it was a lot of perimeter play. Nobody seemed to want to get to the inside. And the other thing that Coach mentioned, guys, and I don't think this has been the case on a lot of nights for the Vancouver Canucks, because they've scored a ton of goals all season, but 48 shot attempts that either missed the net or were blocked. Like, it's funny because you mentioned JT Miller and he does get off the hook just because of his production. But I thought he was sort of the poster boy for that the other night. In the second period, shorthanded chance comes down the right side and fired it like 5 feet high. Like it wasn't even close. And then there was another chance in the third period where, make the goalie. Like I'm a big believer in making goalies make saves, right? Like maybe you score, maybe there's a rebound, maybe it's tipped, whatever. But if you're putting it 5 feet off the net, that's not really helping the cause an awful lot. And so the Canucks did way too much of that the other night, and that seemed to be sticking with the coach in the post game, and even yesterday after he did his media availability.
But Jeff, shots on goal have been a problem all year. Like even when they were leading the league, they were way down the shots on goal.
Yeah.
Statistics, 28.3 shots per night. That is 27th in the National Hockey League. And there is not a playoff team anywhere near that orbit. I do wonder whether some of this has come up and that if you're going to be as low as the Vancouver Canucks have been shots on goal all season long, anticipate that goals per game is going to sag a little bit over 82 because you're just not putting enough pucks on net.
Yeah, I think early in the season, and it kind of goes hand in hand with why all these guys had the high shooting percentage, right? They weren't wasting a lot of shots. They wasted some shots the other night on their own accord, though, when you're missing the target that much. Like, you know, just got to recalibrate a little bit and make sure that you're honing in on that target. The target's not moving. It's where it always is. So I just have to do a better job. But I think also, you know, as they prepare for the final 14 games and then what's beyond, like everything does now have to be viewed through this playoff prism that we've talked about. And more teams are going to be willing to block shots, right? Like you're going to see that the guys are prepared to pay more of a price. And the Washington Capitals, if that, you know, maybe that was an area where they showed some desperation the other night, because the Capitals need every point available to them. They eked out a 2-1 win in Seattle. They come to Vancouver and they repeat the trick. And so, you know, they get a couple of wins there. But even going back to the game against Edmonton where they got shelled, like they don't score much, right? They've scored two in their last three games. And so Capitals are trying to find ways to win 2-1 hockey games. The Canucks have enough offensive firepower. Even if the power play is sputtering along, they should have enough firepower to, you know, get a second goal, get it to overtime, take your chances there, whatever. Missed opportunity for the Vancouver Canucks. Now, they've done so much heavy lifting early in the season that they still lead the division by 8. You know, it kind of feels like they're going to get passed here by any of those three teams that are charging in the Central Division. I think Colorado's won 7 straight now since the trade deadline and, you know, the late second win the other night against Edmonton. So, you know, to me, it's not about holding down top spot in the league or even in the conference, because home ice in the third, like if they get to the third round of the playoffs this season has been a massive success for the Vancouver Canucks. But I do think that, like, they've opened the door a little here for the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers are 8 back, 3 in hand, with 1 game left head-to-head. I don't think that this Pacific Division is sealed yet for the Vancouver Canucks. Now, again, you've got 6 remaining on the homestand. Like, that should play into your hands. You got a Buffalo team that's coming in here after playing in Seattle tonight. So, you know, another team that's tired playing back-to-back. We'll see if the Canucks can make something out of that one. But that, to me, would be troubling. Like, if at the tail end here, the Edmonton Oilers are able to reel in the Vancouver Canucks after the massive lead the Canucks had opened on the Oilers, the struggles, the early season struggles of the Oilers. I do think just optically it's pretty important for the Vancouver Canucks to maintain top spot in the Pacific Division.
Just crunching some numbers from both points that you both made. The Canucks are 27th in shots per game this season, but they're 13th in missed shots this season.
Oh, are they?
So they don't take many shots. And then they miss far too many
on average
of the ones that they do take. Yep. They're not testing the goalie.
Lastly, Jeff, we'll talk to you Friday, but size up the week ahead for us here with the last two Eastern Conference teams on the schedule, Buffalo and Montreal coming to town.
Yeah, and the Sabres have had a bit of a resurgence. I think they're 8-4-1 in their last 13 games heading into Seattle. So, again, the schedule doing the Canucks a favor here, but at some point, it's got to be more than the schedule. They've got to do themselves a favor by playing a full 60 minutes. So, you know, another chance to respond against the Sabres. Montreal, I think they recognize now that any sort of playoff hope is over. Martin St-Louis has left the hockey club. So former Canuck Trevor Letowski running the bench in the interim. Alex Burrows, obviously, there as well. And then you get Calgary, you get Kuzmenko, his return on Saturday night. And, you know, the Flames won't go quietly. I think they're running out of real estate here. They're not going to be a playoff team ultimately, but they can give the Canucks a handful. I think they're experimenting with goaltending right now, and we'll see who they've got between the pipes. But this feels like a big week, guys, because those are 3 winnable opponents on paper. You're at home, you're rested, no back-to-backs, because after that, you know, Los Angeles and Dallas, like those aren't going to be easy opponents. So if you break down the 9-game homestand into 3-game segments, the first one included Winnipeg and Colorado. That wasn't going to be easy. There are no easy games in the NHL, but I just think on paper, this looks like a week for the Vancouver Canucks to make some hay, as long as they get back to the structure, the staples, the wall work, the board battles, and all those things that Rick Tocchet is imploring them to do that they've kind of got away from here in the last couple
of years. And put the puck on net. Don't miss. Great stuff, Jeff. Thank you for this. We'll catch up later in the week.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
So Garrison Price from Wall Center. Presentation, Applewood Auto Group. You can text us, 778-402-9680. And join us Saturday, April 20th. Doors open at noon. Event goes till 5 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater on West Broadway in Kitsilano. a playoff party and a special tribute to our late friend Jason Botchford. Bro, do your playoffs, a media event celebrating the life and legacy of Mr. Botchford, goes, as mentioned, from noon to 5 p.m. We'll be sharing memories, celebrating our city's return to the playoffs for the first time in 9 years. We'll take some audience questions. The matinee will perform. Catherine Botchford's coming out. We'll speak at the event. We'll give you some ticketing information here soon. Can tell you that proceeds will be heading to the BC Mental Health Foundation. So save the date, April 20th, from noon to 5 p.m. Wow. Vancouver Whitecaps FC. And I don't know, Mike D'Agostino. Vanny Sartini, his assistant, has led them to a undefeated MLS record through three matches here. They got two victories and a tie, including a 3-1 win Saturday at FC Dallas. Three goals in the first half and didn't look back. Scoreless second half. Matias Laborda finishes a sensational goal.
Spectacular.
One of the prettiest goals I think the Caps have scored in some time. Brian White and the newcomer, Fafa Picot, all score. I read this stat. Like, it took the Caps 8 games last year before finally getting their first road victory. They're 2-for-2 this year, baby.
Yeah.
In San Jose and in Dallas. Second place in MLS West on 7 points, but in part because they've only played 3 games. Most everybody has played more than them, and their 7 points in 3 games is the best amongst teams that have played just 3. They're home Saturday, 4:30 p.m. BC Place against Real Salt Lake.
The game was very reminiscent of early season Canucks games, believe it or not, in that they weren't dominant per se, but the execution was sublime. Like, they just
what was that, 3 or 4 just perfect passes?
Perfect.
Like, on the absolute, like, millimeter perfect.
Yeah, and they drilled them all home.
Yeah.
And so, and that was sort of what we saw early season with the Canucks, right? They'd set things up, it'd be a perfect, and it would be in the back of the net. And
tic-tac-toe goals.
You don't apologize for it. You take them when you can get them, because there'll be droughts throughout the season. But to exhale out on the road this early is unbelievable. We know BC Place generally gives them a decent fortress, a decent to amazing fortress, depending on the season. So you're going to get your BC Place points now over the course of the next few weeks. So, yeah, it's, you know, you had hoped that Vanni Sartini's absence here in the first 6 games of the season wouldn't have put them into a hole, because they've dug themselves early season holes in a lot of years. This is already their best start since 2012. They haven't had many good starts as an MLS club. So, you know, the fact that they're almost guaranteed now at least an average start. I mean, they could lose out the rest of the suspension to Vanni Sartini, and they would still be okay. But now they've got an opportunity to come back to BC Play Stadium and add more points and have a spectacular record for when Vanny arrives on the scene. And it should be reminded, and I'm sure people do know this, that, you know, Vanny still coaches the team up to game time. Still sets the lineup, and then the in-game is Mike D'Agostino. So he's still involved heavily, but he just can't be there to guide them through the 90 minutes.
Well, you say these BC Place games, because 4 in a row here at BC Place. It gets going Saturday against Real Salt Lake. They are home a week from Saturday to Cascadia rivals Portland Timbers. Then TFC comes to town on April 6th, a Canadian rival. And then they got a score to settle on the 13th of April against LAFC.
Yeah.
My bad.
Galaxy, and then when they eventually do go on the road, it's against the Cascadia rival Seattle. Mm-hmm. So the next month should certainly have our attention.
They don't leave the time zone until April 27th. They have 5 straight matches, 4 of them at home, 1 of them down the I-5. In Seattle. So a fantastic opportunity here for the Caps to bank some points and get off to a good start.
Six different goal scorers already, too. That's the other thing.
Yeah. Everybody's contributing. I can remember Christian Jack years ago telling us there's a lot of the good teams in MLS that don't really use the first 10 games or so. They're basically feeling things out, not necessarily playing with tip-top urgency. Well, if the Caps can bank those points, then they got some cushion for later.
That's right.
In the year. Football south of the border, where Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, was the fulcrum of quarterback movement on the weekend. Kenny Pickett, Pittsburgh guy, University of Pittsburgh, first-round pick, traded cross-state to the Philadelphia Eagles, along with the 120th pick for Philly's 98th selection in the upcoming NFL draft. Steelers also getting a pair of seventh-round picks in 2025, and then they go ahead and spend some of that 25 draft capital in trading for Chicago quarterback Justin Fields. It's a sixth-round pick in 2025. It can become a fourth-round pick with playing time. Don't ask me about the Bears' return on Justin Fields, okay, Blake?
No.
Sore spot?
No. How do you think Russell's feeling about that trade?
Well, apparently Russell got starting quarterback guaranteed to him.
He did.
In signing with Pittsburgh.
But he, I mean...
But, of course, he's got to hold up his end of the bargain.
That's
he's
right.
He's got to play well and stay healthy.
That's right. So, like, how long does – what's the understanding of that? 4 weeks? You get to be the starting quarterback for 4 weeks, and there better be results to be seen? I mean, they're not going to wait very long. You don't make a trade like that and just say, oh, yeah, you've got 17 starts coming your way.
Yeah.
It'll be very interesting.
I mean, at that price, I would have just preferred the Bears hold on to him. Make him the backup.
I don't
use him as a gadget player. He could be the best running back in the league.
So the Steelers make all this noise. Do you think Steelers fans are excited about the start of the season?
Well,
I don't think so.
I think they feel like their quarterbacking is in better stead. Apparently, Pickett did not react well either to Russell being coming in.
I just bet Steelers fans had absolutely had hopes for a more stable and better quarterbacking situation. I'm sure this is not what they had in mind.
Seahawks sign Miami linebacker Jerome Baker to a one-year deal worth $7 million. So there you go. They lose Bobby Wagner. They lose Jordan Brooks. They have come back and signed Tyrell Dodson from Buffalo and Jerome Baker to backfill. I suspect those will be your starting inside linebackers and the two guys on the field when they play that two inside linebacker. Look, Hawks blogger Evan Hill, it's very clear to me this is a regrouping year for the Seahawks, eating all this dead money this year, short one-year rental acquisitions, gutting the roster. I do not expect them to take a meaningful step forward this season. It's setting the foundation for 2025 and beyond. Yes, John Schneider in his first year with the keys to the kingdom, of course, head coach Mike McDonald in his first year, and it very much looks like Seattle is setting things up for the longer term. Okay, poll question results from Friday. Asked you, who do you want in the first round of the playoffs? The options here were Los Angeles, Nashville, Vegas, don't care. Who do the people select, Blake?
Don't care.
Nashville won. 43%. Don't care got 36%.
Okay.
Kings 13%. VGK 8%. Game 7 OT says not LA. And he cites their plus 26 goal differential. I know you like goal differential. Raylan, it doesn't matter. Canucks should be competitive against anyone, and beating a hard opponent in the first round can fuel a run. Jan, I know a lot of people will say the Preds, but I feel like everyone wrote them off this season and are playing with house money and no pressure to beat the Canucks. The Kings have had their struggles, especially in net. Also would prefer Vancouver to stay in the Western time zone for round one. That is a thing if you're traveling two separate time zones, particularly if you have to go back there a second time. They had to go back to Nashville a second time in 2011. And we have since heard from the likes of Ryan Kessler, Chris Higgins, and others, they had so many guys already beat up that the extra travel of going back to Nashville a second time took a toll.
I don't think it affects the series because both teams have to do it, and they have to make the travel the first time. The Preds would, for instance, in this case. But you're right. If you have plans of moving on after that round, those miles are going to show up in your play.
Bruce says we seem to match up good against Nashville. And George says, and we saw a lot of this, you know, hockey may not be superstitious, but it's a little stitious. Never wish for a team to play. It'll come back and bite you. Remember wanting L.A. in 2012 and then L.A. going on to win the Cup? Not to mention Leaf fans chanting for Florida last year.
Right. I do agree. It's not really a superstition per se. It's just, you know, it's going to happen anyway. Like, you can't.
No, but here's the thing. If they say it, I understand it becomes bulletin board material. And you can believe in bulletin board material or not. If we all talk about it, has no effect on the proceedings.
No, no. But you can have a wish. Fans can.
Yes.
But ultimately,
you're allowed to fan.
But
you're allowed to wish.
But fate's. But
you're allowed to have fun.
But fate's just going to play out. Is my point.
No, of course.
Like it's like it because it has no effect. You know, there's no point in wishing because it's just going to happen how it's going to happen.
Errors and omissions from Friday's program. You said the Canucks with the best offense, Blake. They're now down to fifth.
Are they? Goals per game?
Goals per game. That is the best metric, right?
Yes.
Goals per game. And then we were late on the live stream, and Grady sends his apologies to everyone who was waiting. Anything from the inbox, Grady?
No.
Very subdued Grady Sass here on a Monday. Thanks for listening, everybody. A reminder, subscribe to this show, Rinkwide Vancouver, Canucks Conversation, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on social, that's Twitter, Insta, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. Remember, we're live at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time on many of those platforms daily. And, of course, support those community sponsors you hear us talking about. Keep it local.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.